massacre them all?
Michael sat with his head resting on his knees, his hands folded in front of him, as though he'd been interrupted in mid-prayer.
Is this a problem, Michael?
The young man didn't answer Ryan. His eyes were closed, and his face had gone pale.
You're going to try and shoot down how many? 20 or 30 of God's creatures without a word of warning or a chance of survival?
Tell you what, you go on down, Michael, and ask him to surrender.
They wouldn't.
So it's double stoop to suggest it, then.
Yeah, I know that. Can't we tell them they got no chance and let them go if they don't harm any of the children or Dean and the rest?
Dark night. Stickies aren't down home, folks. You shit for brains, kid.
Keep it down, both of you, or we'll have muties all over us.
Sure, sure. You're right, Christy. Michael, will you listen to me?
Sure. Look, I'm sorry about...
I know you weren't born in Deathlands. You see things like a... Stickies aren't human beings, Michael. It'd be like worrying about treading on a poisonous scorpion. If we don't go in against the sickhead bastards on full auto, then there'll be deaths on our side. Might well be anyway. Nobody can ever predict where the cards are gonna fall. But you have to plan it best you can.
I see that now. I'm ready.
Fine. Then let's go.
The Mutie camp was set in a large clearing, about a mile inland from the lake. Ideally, Ryan would have liked the chance to wait, then move in at the optimum time, perhaps a couple of hours after midnight, when most of the Stickies would have collapsed into a drugged or drunken sleep. But nighttime was when the perverted nuke mutations launched into their torture fests. To wait would almost certainly mean being too late. Numbers were massively on the side of the Stickies, but they seemed to be poorly armed, and there was no sign at all that they were worried about the possibility of anyone raiding them, which tipped the balance strongly in favor of the four attackers. It was important to try to kill every one of the Stickies. If a few escaped, then the retreat to the boat would be made that much more dangerous. The best way of ensuring that was for each of them to take a quadrant of the compass and come in from four different directions to hit them hard and fast. Be the firstest with the mostest had been Trader's basic ruling. When Ryan had once mentioned that to Doc, the old-timer had pointed out that it wasn't exactly original and had its origins with a commander in the ancient Civil War. Before they separated, Ryan gave a last whispered warning to Michael and Christy. There was no need to mention something so obvious to JB.
The danger is shooting each other. Aim low and keep a triple red watch for the rest of us coming in.
There had been a momentary temptation to go opposite the armorer, knowing that was safest. But Ryan rejected the idea, choosing to go around to the north himself, leaving Michael to cover the south. Christy took the lakeside, while JB circled to the east. He and JB had Krons. The other two would have to rely on a measured count to make sure they were in position and ready to go in at the right moment. Since there was no tearing hurry to initiate the attack, Ryan allowed a full half hour for everyone to get into position. At that point, he would fire a single round in the air from the Steyr rifle.
No questions?
There were none. They'd set free the children if that proved possible, but only after they'd ensured the safety of Dean, Mildred, and Doc. As Ryan picked his way along the narrow trails between the tall trees, he heard a pair of pigeons rise noisily into the air, somewhere toward the lake, disturbed by Christie's passing by. He hoped that none of the muties would have noticed it and made the connection. When he was halfway around, he wrinkled his nose at a bitter, acidic smell. He stopped in mid-stride and waited, listening intently. The path ahead was straight for 50 yards or so, and he could see a pile of fresh droppings, still steaming slightly in the cool morning air. Ryan had never been a great tracker, but he guessed that some large carnivore was nearby, possibly either a bear or a puma. But the woods were brimming with a deep stillness, and he began to move on north, looping around the Stickies' camp, not heading toward the scent of the smoke until he'd made sure there was no outer ring of sentries. He checked his timing, the tiny digital numbers flicking over to show he'd been moving for just over 16 minutes. Nearly a quarter of an hour remained before he'd fire the signal bullet, and all hell would break loose in the serene New England forest. Now he could smell the foul odors that he always associated with Sticky camps. Rotting food, burned meat, unwashed bodies, and the peculiar decayed fish-like stench that seemed to surround the creatures. Most frontier villes would have any number of stray animals hanging around them, lean, slant-eyed mongrels and vicious, feral cats. But there was something different about Stickies. Even among their own muty kind, they were regarded as outcasts, and it was rare to find any sort of living creature within range of their malodorous camps. Ryan picked his careful way closer. Just ahead of them, there was a tangle of fallen timber, piled almost shoulder high. He began to pick his way around it when he heard the sound. He dropped to a crouch, easing the rifle onto the ground, holding the Sig Sauer ready, hoping desperately that he wouldn't have to open fire and get their attack off to a messy and premature start. He risked a glance through the tangled branches, seeing that there were two of the muties. One carried a single-shot musket of extreme age, while the other had only a short-handled axe tucked into its narrow string belt. They drew closer, and then they stopped, only just the other side of the big deadfall. Ryan waited. Christy had gone right to the shore of the sunlit lake before starting to work her way eastward again toward the Stickies' camp. She had immediately found the boats that they'd used on the raid on Quinley the previous night. Though boats wasn't the best word for a motley collection of rafts and crude canoes tugged up onto the pebbles. From there, the trail was easy to follow. Bushes had been broken down and trees hacked with machetes. Barely concealed in the undergrowth, a quarter mile from Champlin, Christy saw a protruding pair of bare feet. Flies buzzed around the bloodied corpse, and her heart nearly stopped with a jolting fear that it might be Dean. But it wasn't. It was a younger child, barely 5 years old, with its throat cut so savagely that the whiteness of the spine showed through the clotted blackness.
Gaia.
Christy drew her gun and moved on a little faster to be in position when Ryan fired the warning shot from his rifle. She had calculated that just over half of the time had gone. Ryan didn't have a choice. The pair of Stickies had started to strip away some of the dry wood from the deadfall, one of them walking straight to the side where he was crouched. Ryan took a chance and jabbed the pistol into the skinny midriff of the surprised mutie. Ryan didn't stop to watch, something he'd already seen dozens of times in his life. The body crashing to the ground had made enough noise to attract the attention of the other mutie on the far side of the deadfall. It was carrying the musket, and it immediately began to fumble with the grotesquely long gun, struggling to get it cocked and aimed at the one-eyed Norm who'd suddenly sprung from the forest's ferny floor. Ryan didn't hesitate. He holstered the Sig Sauer and stepped in close to the Sticky. He kicked it in the groin. The old Kentucky long gun dropped silently to the dirt as the Sticky started to double over. The breath seemed to have become trapped deep in its lungs by the shock of the attack. Blood was already trickling down its chin and chest from its open mouth, where it had bitten the end of its tongue with its needle-filed teeth. Ryan watched carefully, standing away until the thing was down on its knees, its face pressed into the soft earth, rocking slowly back and forth. Then he stepped in, having checked all around him that the forest was deserted, pressed the barrel of the Sig Sauer to the back of the Sticky's neck, and pulled the trigger for a third time. Ryan looked around again, then picked up the rifle and slung it once more across his back. He checked his chron and saw that the chilling of the two Stickies had taken him less than 100 seconds from beginning to end. It was now time for him to move in closer to the camp, ready to fire the signal round. At the last moment, Ryan changed his mind and used the warning bullet to chill one of the Stickies, putting the 7.62mm round between the eyes of a white-haired muty woman who was about to cut the throat of one of the Quimbley children, two along from where Dean was tied. A muty woman threw a knife at Ryan, and the hilt struck him a glancing blow in the small of the back. And he turned and shot her with the Steyr. JB ran the Uzi in a careful, steady line, right to left, cutting down five Stickies in that single burst. Christy had reached the line of prisoners, managing a reassuring grin for Dean. She knelt, reaching for her knife.
Christy, behind you!
Christy turned and snapped off the .38. But one of the little girls from the Ville, freaked into blind panic, jumped up at that moment and took the bullet through the throat. Christy didn't flinch or hesitate, using another bullet from her Smith & Wesson to chill the Sticky. She was never certain if anyone had seen the shot that killed the child. She never, ever mentioned it to a living soul. Michael was ready to shoot as some of the fleeing Stickies raced toward him. But Mose turned at the moment he opened fire, scattering in all directions, to be gunned down by either Ryan or JB. Michael wasn't sure that he actually shot anyone in that ferocious, crazed morning among the pine-scented trees. Mildred tried to keep track of the mutie that had taken away her beloved ZKR pistol, but she lost sight of his ragged pink shirt in a panic. Doc sat up, his hands still bound behind him, ready to kick out if any of the Stickies decided that they were going to try to take at least one of the Norm prisoners with them into their arid shadowlands. Ryan dropped his empty rifle in the trampled earth and stood stock still, his feet spread, holding the Sig Sauer cocked. He moved it like the tongue of a rattler, tasting the dangers in the air, looking for a fresh target. But there wasn't one. It was over. The smoke from the Stickies' fire drifted up serenely between the branches of the overhanging trees. Nobody was shooting. At a quick glance, there were at least half a dozen of the muties still alive, though all of them were sorely wounded. JB had unslung the Smith & Wesson M4000 scatter gun from his shoulders, the empty Uzi dangling from a strap on his belt. But the lethal flechettes weren't going to be needed. Christy was on her knees, cutting away with her slim knife at the cords that tied Mildred's hands behind her. Dean was already up, rubbing furiously at his chafed wrists to try to restore the circulation to his fingers. His eyes darted through the carnage as he sought the mutie that had stolen his Browning high power. Doc sat still, his head turning slowly from side to side, as though he hadn't yet managed to take it all in.
That's it.
By the time everyone was untied, only three of the entire pack of Stickies was still alive. Ryan went around with his flensing knife and opened up their carotid arteries. And then there were none. The children were sent packing, pointed in the southerly direction, assured that they were no longer in any danger. Most of them still seemed to be sunk in a trough of clinical shock, and they left without a word of thanks and without a backward glance. Doc, Mildred, and Dean recovered their blasters from the dead Stickies, and the seven friends, safely reunited, set off through the forest to where they'd hidden the boat. Ryan sat in the stern of the crowded little boat, his hand on the tiller.
It's a simple choice, friends. We jump straight away, or stop off at Quinley and let Michael speak with Dorothy. Let's hear what anyone has to say.
Can I go first, Ryan?
Of course.
The way I see it, we have to pass close by the ville anyway. We rescued their children, so Moses and the rest are going to be real glad to see us and hear the news.
Probably right.
Probably?
We're not dealing with what you and I might think of as a rational mind, Michael. It's like watching a rabid fox and trying to decide who he's going to try and bite first. But I grant you that Quimbley should be a touch grateful.
So we can go in?
Anyone have a problem with stopping off for a few minutes in Quimbley?
Why can't we row around the ville and then let Michael go in on his own if he wants to see Dorothy another time that much?
I don't mind.
JB took off his fedora and wiped sweat from his temples.
No. We all go, or none of us goes. Only safe way.
Right. We'll pull in on the lakeward side. Most of them will be in the fields by now. There's a fair chance we can do this without shaking the trees.
It was a pleasant and easy row back along the lake toward Quimbley. Ryan steered them in a straight line, moving away from the shore.
Nobody's seen us yet.
The moments as they approached the ville from the water were the real danger. If there had been an ambush planned, that would have been the time and the place. Even with their superior firepower, they could have been blasted out of the lake by a dozen or so concealed rifles.
Right. Triple red. Keep a skirmish line. Michael, where do you think Dorothy will be right now?
She said last night that it was her turn to be on duty in the temple, waiting on Moses. Guess I'll find her there.
No, we'll find her there.
The streets were deserted, so quiet that Ryan began to feel like they were walking into a trap. But the chances to cold-cock them had already been there. Why wait? He was out at point, with Christy right behind him. The others were strung out, JB bringing up his usual rearguard position. The main gates were open, and they could see out along the causeway the neat allotments and tilled meadows. There was a scattering of the young people working there, but none of them noticed the intruders in their ville. Ryan held up a hand to stop them, looking all around. But there was still not a sniff of betrayal.
Moses' place.
Can I go first? I'd like to see her, sort of on my own. See if she still says what she promised last night.
What did she promise?
JB, you and Mildred wait out here and keep watch. Wouldn't want to find us trapped inside there.
Sure.
Let's go in.
It was cool as Ryan pushed at the carved wooden door, feeling its ponderous weight as it swung open. The inner room was as luxurious and silent as ever, with torches blazing and iron sconces on the walls, their light dancing over the priceless old paintings that hung everywhere.
I had not thought you would return.
We set your babies free, Moses. They're on their way back through the forest. Maybe you should get Yehu to send a party out to bring them in.
Perhaps. Perhaps not.
A maroon velvet curtain moved at the side of the large dark mirror, and a hidden door opened and closed. Out came Yehu and Dorothy. The blonde youth had his hair loose. His deep blue eyes stared at Ryan. He was completely naked, and his body was marked with crimson weals across his hairless chest and down over his stomach and thighs. Dorothy was partly dressed, but she too had whip marks across her bare breasts, and what looked like the jagged bites from sharp teeth disfigured her thighs. She held her head down and wouldn't look up at any of them, not even Michael.
Dorothy, what the fuck's been happening?
Looks like Moses has been having fun with his apostles. Is that why you keep him young and tender, Moses?
He's the Lord, Outlander.
Dorothy tried to fasten her blouse across her nakedness, still not looking up.
Some lord. Are we gonna just leave this, lover?
Such foolishness. All you oldies with your prim and prudish morality. Yehu!
Master?
Fetch the others, and we will have a ceremony tonight that will long be spoken of as we dispose of these interfering old Outlanders. Go, now.
Stay where you are, son.
Do as I say, Yehu.
Yes, Master.
Yehu turned. Doc hesitated, unwilling to shoot the naked young man in the back. Yehu grabbed a torch and whirled it so that flames streamed out.
Mine.
Yehu's mouth opened in shock and surprise, and his arms flew wide. The burning torch landed at the foot of a dusty tapestry, which immediately caught fire. Yehu staggered a few clumsy steps, his eyes blank and blind, his fingers clawing at the air. He slipped to his knees with blood frothing from his pale lips, dappling the wooden floor. Dorothy looked up at the shot, blinking in horror. Michael ran the few steps to her side and put an arm around her. For a moment, she resisted, trying to pull away. Then she collapsed.
Good way to finish it.
The flames reached the ceiling and started to devour slender beams, already lapping at some of the oil paintings.
Hurry! Put out the fire, children!
I have encountered varieties of evil and sickness in my long life, but not, I think, anything compare with the way you have corrupted and destroyed the innocents.
As the mirror collapsed into itself, it revealed the room beyond. And it revealed Moses, lying on an antique sofa, its brocade material filthy and stained. He wore what looked like a bedsheet, which had once been virginal white, and was now a disgusting mixture of different shades of dirt. Moses was roughly 4 feet tall, and had to have weighed close to 300 pounds. He had the soft, plump body of a child, with the seamed face and veiled eyes of an old man. His teeth, as he smiled at the watchers, were crooked and yellow, and his fingernails were grotesquely long, so jagged and distorted that they almost curled back on themselves.
See my godhead?
See his boasted pomp and show! Your pleasure's faded, Moses. Reckoning time's here.
The fire was so hot that they all had to retreat toward the main entrance. Moses sat up, the cloth falling away, revealing the folds and creases of his gross nakedness.
I have taken my sport where I found it, founded this place and sucked it dry for so many, many years. Now I will pay for my sport. But it was so good, Outlanders. So good.
The temple had become an inferno.
There's nothing to keep us here. The whole vill's likely to go.